morning and welcome. This is Mike Harris on the Public Broadcasting Network, Studio B. And today is Monday, October 8th, 2012. Well, today we're going to be joined by a guest, Harold Covington, who's a very prolific author. Harold will be joining us here shortly. But first, I want to point out some things. Over the weekend, a lot of articles have come out. There's a couple on Veterans Today. They're all over the internet. And it's about this new legislation that came out that told FEMA to start preparing for mass casualties and death and destruction on a massive basis in this country. And it's really quite unsettling when you couple this with the fact that there's so many billions of rounds of ammunition have been ordered. It appears that the gloves are coming off and our government is preparing to go to war against the American people. They're planning on slaughtering us. And that's just what it appears like, but they're passing legislation. FEMA is going to be able to take over funeral homes and essentially dig mass graves to be able to put many, many millions of us into. So, you know, I hate to open up on such a gloomy thing. I mean, I've always been hoping that we'll get through this election cycle, that whatever happens, we'll be able to survive it. But whenever the U.S. government is preparing for massive casualties, as they state, you know, hundreds of millions of casualties, folks, they're coming after us, and it's time. And just been told by my board operator that Harold is ready. Good morning, Harold. How are you, sir? Hello, Harold.
Yeah, I'm here. I'm sorry. I had your microphone there.
Okay. Hey, well, good. Anyway, welcome to the show. Glad to have you here. One of the reasons I invited you on today is our government is really, they're taking the gloves off, and they're showing themselves to be the Bolshevik communists that they really are. They've just issued orders, passed legislation for FEMA to prepare for massive casualties on an unprecedented scale. And so I wanted to get this out because I've read your novels, and granted, they're only fiction. But
so far,
well, you know, I'd hate to see it come real, but they're only fiction, and it really is probably the best workable plan for people who wish to survive, and not only survive after the collapse of the U.S. failed state, but to be able to prosper in a land of our own people, by and for our people. So anyway, welcome to the show, and we're going to have a break coming up here in a second, so I'm going to save the questions until then. But Harold, why don't you tell them real quick where people can get your books online, because these are out. Number one, they're a fun read. It's excitement, okay. It's adventure. They're just fun.
Right. Well, they are referred to as the Northwest novels, and there are right now four of them. There will be five when I finish number five at the end of the year. And you can obtain my novels from Amazon.com, from BarnesandNoble.com, from Alibris.com, and a number of other sources online. It's called Print for Order Publishing. And the novels in question are The Hill of the Ravens, A Distant Thunder, A Mighty Fortress, and The Brigade. There is volume one of the fifth novel, which is called Freedom's Sons, and that is available from Lulu.com. That's a sort of a quickie version of self-publishing that I use to go ahead and get the first volume in book form. Anyway, you can order them online from those sources, but especially from Amazon. You can get anything from Amazon these days.
Well, here's our first break coming up right away, so we'll be right back in 3 minutes. Harold, stick with us. This is Mike Harris on Republic Broadcasting Network, Studio B. And today is Monday, October 8th, 2012. And our guest today is author Harold Covington. And Harold, let's go back a little bit and tell people really what is the premise of your books that makes it so germane to the situation this country faces today.
Well, the premise of the Northwest novels is that essentially white people, white Americans, decide to take back part of this country for our own people. I have often believed for a long time that it is simply impossible for us to somehow magically bring back the 1950s or 1960s and make all these black and brown faces just vanish in a puff of smoke and turn back the clock. Essentially, that is one of the premises of the novels, that it is impossible to turn back the clock, and the white man in America must look to the future. What happens in the novels is that a guerrilla group called the NVA, the Northwest Volunteer Army, establishes a homeland for all white people the world over in the Pacific Northwest. It consists originally of 3.5 states, Washington, Idaho, Oregon, and the western part of Montana. And then later on in Freedom Sons, which is the last novel, which deals with the first 50 years of the Northwest Republic, at one point there's this big war where the United States tries to reconquer the Northwest Republic, and of course the Northwest Republic, being the good guys, win, and they take back even more territory, parts of Canada, parts of California, so forth and so on. Essentially, these are novels of white separatism, and they are based on a belief that in order for the white man to survive as a race, as a species, as a civilization, we are going to have to physically separate ourselves from all of the, basically, the crap that America has become over the past century. The race mixing, the illegal immigration, the corruption in government, the socialism, the whole nine yards, everything that's been destroying our people for the past century, we have got to get away from. We've got to have a homeland of our own. It's like trying to bring back an extinct species like the wolves. We have to have a habitat. I believe that that habitat should be in the Pacific Northwest, which is probably the last remaining unspoiled territory on the North American continent. And so that basically is what the books are about, is how the white man finally, at the 11th hour, wakes up and establishes his own homeland here in North America.
Well, Harold, let me ask you a question, you know, because there's some premises in the books about, they don't call the Department of Homeland Security, I think you call it the FATPO police, I think it is.
I refer to DHS as well. I try to make them as realistic as possible. What kind of scares me about the books is, I'm not saying this to toot my own horn, but I seem to have almost a gift of prophecy. A lot of the things that I've written about in books, and I've been writing these books over the past 10 years, a lot of the things that I wrote about some years ago seem almost to have come true.
Well, that's really why I wanted you on, because I don't know if you've gone to the internet, but if I'm going to direct people to veteranstoday.com, if you go on veteranstoday.com, there's at least 3, if not 4 articles up about how the U.S. government is preparing for a massive civil war against the people of the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's going on in real time. That's why they've purchased all these billions and billions of 40 caliber hollow point ammunition, which is illegal under the Geneva Convention. But they're planning on turning those bullets against the American people. And Jim Fetzer wrote an article, someone named Lasha Darkmoon wrote an article, Gordon Duff wrote an article. All of these prominent people who are in both the truth movement, the patriot movement, and trying to get this country to sober up and realize how dire our situation is, have finally figured out that the government is coming for us, and they're going to be coming for us very soon. And so I wanted you on because the plan that is articulated in your fictional books is probably it will enhance everyone's survivability if they would follow that fictional plan.
Interestingly, as part of several of the novels in my fictitious little civil war I've got going up here in the Northwest, as a last-minute desperation move, the federal government starts rounding up white people, including whole small towns, and deporting them out of the Northwest to FEMA camps in Nevada and the Arizona desert and that sort of stuff. So, like I say, if I have a sort of a gift of prophecy here, it's not one that I want to see happen, but it's not so much prophecy in my books, it's predictability. You have to understand that the government of the United States right now is a tyranny. Right now, it's headed by a third world dictator, and tyrannies are going to act in certain ways. Barack Hussein Obama is, in essence, a Stalinist, and the government that he heads is going to comport itself in the manner of Stalin. If you want to see what's coming in this country, you might pick up The Gulag Archipelago by Alexander Solzhenitsyn. Solzhenitsyn resisted Stalin, wrote about Stalin.
Well, Harold, there's one thing. If anybody is going to read that book, read the chapter called The Arrest.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the one where Solzhenitsyn comes out and says, all of us, to a man who were in the gulag, wished we would have acted in our own defense, wish we would not have gone along with the arrest. We wish that we would have put fear into the hearts of the arrestors. because if they had to fear that they would not come home that night, maybe. And there's far more of us than there are of these government thugs out there.
That's a very famous passage. I've quoted that on a number of occasions on my blogs and elsewhere.
Well, I think it's a great passage, and I think that everybody needs to do it. But people forget that in Stalinist Russia, they rounded up a quarter of the citizens of the city of Leningrad and disappeared them. And that's what our government in this country, I fear, is preparing to do to us.
Well, they've been doing it for a long time. If you, admittedly, a lot of the prisoners are black and brown, but right now the United States imprisons more of its citizens than any nation in history, with the possible exception of Stalinist Russia. Historians are kind of unsure as to how many people Stalin locked up, but they do seem to believe that we're getting there. We're reaching that level. So a lot of the things that occurred in the old Soviet Union are occurring now in this country. It's history repeating itself.
Well, so according to Solzhenitsyn, he documents that the Bolsheviks murdered 66 million of their own citizens, of good Christian white Russians, and just outright murdered them. And that's what we fear is going to be happening here. And you look at this new bill that was just passed last week. I think it was H.R. 16695, which authorizes FEMA to prepare for mass casualty events, where they'll take over funeral homes and they'll be authorized to dig mass graves in order to dispose of the huge number of bodies they're going to have to be disposing of. And it's just very frightening that our government is even conceiving of these things and turning these weapons of destruction upon the American people, whom they're sworn to protect and defend.
Well, interestingly, today in the Soviet Union, when they're building a sports stadium or working on the roads or something like that, it's not at all uncommon for a construction crew or someone like that to come up with a mass grave from the Stalin era with 10, 12,000 skeletons in it, each one with a little bullet hole in their head. It's a normal occurrence over there. I think some point in time, maybe in the future in this country, it won't be so unusual for someone to uncover a FEMA grave like that. Like I say, it's sort of, as Yogi Berra said, deja vu all over again. There is no question at all that under Barack Hussein Obama, this country is headed towards a form of Marxism. I don't know how anybody can look at what he's done in the past 4 years and not see that. Nationalizing the health system, nationalizing the automobile factories, this sort of stuff.
Well, Harold, that brings us up to an interesting conundrum, because we look at the two major party candidates. You look at Obama on one side and Romney on the other, and really neither one is fit to hold the office as outlined by the Constitution of the U.S.
Well, that's American elections. We haven't had a decent presidential candidate since probably any time in the past century, with the possible exception of George Wallace, but I suspect if he'd won, he probably would have betrayed us as well.
Well, they attempted an assassination on him that left him paralyzed from the waist down. The bullet severed his spine, but they attempted to assassinate him. They assassinated John Kennedy, his brother Robert. They even killed his son through manipulating his airplane's instrumentation. You look at Martin Luther King was killed. You look at Paul Wellstone, John Tower. They have systematically, I did a show on this once about how they systematically assassinated the entire conservative wing of the Democrat Party. And it's going on, and Eisenhower warned us. He warned us about this military-industrial complex. Here's our next break coming up at a good time. And we'll pick this up right on the other side of the break, because we're just scratching the surface here. We're setting the stage for what's really to come, folks. Stay with us. Good morning and welcome back. This is Mike Harris of the Public Broadcasting Network. Today is Monday, October 8th, 2012, and our guest today is author Harold Covington. And the topic is really, it's his books and how Harold has had the gift of forecasting into the future very accurately exactly what our government is doing, and the template that he outlines in his fictional books of what might be a good strategy for Americans to employ in order to survive this coming, looks like civil war in the U.S. is what it looks like, Harold. I hate to say it, but whenever our own government is out buying billions of rounds of ammunition. The Department of Homeland Security buying billions of rounds of ammunition. I mean, they don't have a foreign mandate. They have a domestic mandate. So it's not like they're going to be over there killing those evil Muslims. They're going to be coming after regular folk, so to speak.
Well, I've been saying this for a long time, ever since Bush started bringing in all these laws about Guantanamo and detention without trial and illegal wiretapping. The sort of nudge-nudge, wink-wink line that the United States government's been giving us is, well, yeah, we got all these tyrannical laws now, but you don't have to worry. They will only be used against dark-skinned foreign Muslims and on foreign soil. And no, 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 we would never do this to American citizens. And of course, they're doing it to American citizens. And now Obama, to my astonishment, has appropriated to himself through the National Defense Authorization Act the right to kill American citizens at will without trial. And he has actually exercised that so-called right of his. Now, again, true, so far, it's only been with dark-skinned Muslims on foreign soil. But the fact is that all of these laws, the killing and the detention without trial and the illegal wiretapping and the constant spying and the suspension of habeas corpus, which is what Abraham Lincoln tried during the Civil War without success, all of this stuff, once they get these laws onto the books, there is no guarantee that they will not be used against Baptist good old boys in Alabama with rifle racks on their pickup trucks. Once we allow the federal government to appropriate this kind of power to itself, there is effectively no restraint that we can impose on the federal government to prevent them from using these powers against us, other, of course, than the one that we won't use, which is the one I discuss in my novels, direct armed resistance against the government and the establishment of our own country here in the North American continent.
Well, that's really the rub of it. But let's ask a question. You know, I look at things like Secretary of Homeland Security Janet Napolitano. She recruited some people from East Germany to come in and help her structure her department, and namely a gentleman named Marcus Wolf and another one named Eric Mueller. She recruited those two guys to come into the U.S. and to help her put together a police state, and she did, and that's what we've got. Then you look at what these fusion centers have come up with and how they're monitoring every cell phone call, all internet traffic, everything. And do you know what they've discovered? There are no terrorists in the U.S. There's none. They can't find a justification for these billions of dollars of budget. And then you watch and you look and you say, my gosh, they've ordered millions, billions of rounds of 40 caliber hollow point ammunition, which is illegal under the Geneva Convention for Homeland Security. And what's the only conclusion you can reach is that they're planning on using this on the American people.
Well, I've mentioned this in my own podcast, Radio Free Northwest, but in this country, ever since 9/11, anti-terrorism has become a multi-billion dollar industry as far as appropriation of federal budget goes. And if you work for or with the United States government, that's always the name of the game, control of the money. Who gets the money? Who gets how much money? So the thing is, without terrorists, there can't be anti-terrorists. There can't be these billion-dollar budgets. And so if there are no terrorists out there, then the feds just have to make them. This is how you get the FBI committing moral atrocities like the Edgar Steele case and now doing this stuff about they'll get some poor little Apu from the Quickie Mart and they'll convince him that he is surrounded by an Al-Qaeda cell of four or five guys, all of whom are federal informants, and the FBI provides him with a so-called explosive belt or a car bomb with inert substances, of course. The FBI sets up this whole so-called terrorist case from beginning to end. They arrest the poor schmuck, and they drag him in front of a court, and judges are now acknowledging in public that the FBI fabricates these so-called terrorist cases. And it says, well, yeah, but he had the intent to do it anyway, so bang, 25 years. Well, it's a joke.
You bring up a great point about that, because if you go back to the World Trade Center bombing that happened during the Clinton administration, and you go back to that era in time, and that was indeed an FBI operation, and the confidential informant who the FBI involved was told that the bomb material was going to be, you know, inert, and it turned out to be very real, and the FBI really set that thing up. So
I think that's what happened in Oklahoma City as well.
Well, I think Oklahoma City is a little more complex on that one as well, but I think you're right. We can come right back to that in just a few minutes because we've got a break coming up here, and we'll be right back in a few minutes. Thank you. Look at the music already. Let's stop it. I mean, come on. There we go. Okay, now our guest today is author Harold Covington. Harold, welcome back.
Okay.
Anyway, I really urge everyone listening to, you know, get a copy of your books. And the first one was Hill of the Ravens, and it really gives you a that's one where they were ambushed, if I recall, and one of the flying columns was wiped out because
right.
of traitors.
It opened to that scene, yeah.
All of these books, you can read them in order, you can read them out of order. They all make sense about what needs to be done if we're going to salvage at least a portion of this country in a way that we as Americans have grown up. I mean, you and I are about the same age. You know, we grew up in a different era. I mean, back when police officers were really peace officers, and they weren't enforcement thugs like they are now. I mean, we had guys like, you know, Andy of Mayberry, you know, and that's really how the local cops were treated. They were friendly, they were cordial, they knew who was who, they knew what was what, and they didn't have this attitude.
Yeah.
And the attitude really came in whenever Chertoff became Secretary of Homeland Security, who is a dual Israeli citizen, and he came in and brought in this whole Israeli mindset of how to train our police officers, and they're really treating the American people like they treat Palestinians in Israel now.
The police are becoming militarized. I noticed Department of Homeland Security and the federal government is loading them up with all kinds of fancy new equipment, you know, armored cars and body armor and automatic weaponry and that sort of stuff. If you're like 7 or 8 man department in Moose Jaw, Idaho, or something like that, you don't need all this stuff. But this is especially happening here in the Northwest and in other largely rural areas of the country. In other words, predominantly white areas of the country. The police are being militarized, and in essence, they're being placed under a central command. I think it's a way to get around the Posse Comitatus Act, which forbids the use of American troops against American civilians. So when it hits the fan, they're not going to be using troops against the population. They're going to be using militarized police to a large extent, whose loyalties have been corrupted and whose minds have been brainwashed and so forth on.
That's one thing Obama came out and said. He came out and said that he wanted to have a civilian force that was armed as well as the military.
Mm-hmm.
And it appears that they're well on their way to doing this.
Mm-hmm. Well, of course, in addition to getting around the Posse Comitatus Act, it means that when the government decides to move, they can, in essence, order armed forces directly against the American population, and they won't have to go through the Joint Chiefs of Staff or the generals at the Pentagon and some of these, you know, old red, white, and blue Marine types who might object to using armed force against the... You know, that was basically was how the first Civil War began. People think it began at Fort Sumter. That's not totally true. Fort Sumter was provoked by the fact that Abraham Lincoln called for 100,000 volunteers specifically to use force against the South. That was what triggered the actual fighting. There is no question that Americans today have to fear the intentions of the United States government, because the United States government is no longer in their hands. It represents the Democrat special interest groups. It represents the liberal fringe. The American government has lost all touch with genuine American values and with the original white Americans who made this country what it was. And so, yes, we need to be afraid of them, and we need to fear their intentions.
Well, you bring up an interesting point, because we're always told the old argument, which is really a facetious argument about, oh, we're all immigrants. Well, I'm sorry, I'm not an immigrant.
No.
You know, my family's lived here at least 8 generations. I've got the records to prove it in my possession. And if I believe what Ancestry.com tells me, my family's lived here 12 generations. And so I don't think I'm an immigrant, but we're fed that Marxist line that we're all immigrants, and we are not. Some of us were born here, and our fathers were born here, and our grandfathers and their grandfathers before them.
Exactly.
And our people made this country what it is, and we're being overrun. We've got 50 million illegal aliens living in this country who do not belong here and need to be deported, and Reagan betrayed the American people by not following the Eisenhower precedent and deporting these people. But they're here because American business wants them here. It's cheaper for them to hire illegal aliens than it is to hire Americans.
Yeah.
We've offshored our jobs.
Well, Democrats and Republicans are just as bad. They share the guilt as far as immigration goes. The Republicans, who are basically in the pocket of big business, want these people here to provide cheap labor and undercut the wages that they have to pay their American workers. And so by increasing the labor pool, this is another reason they brought in feminism and that sort of stuff in order to bring millions of women into the workforce. The more labor you've got, basically, the less you have to pay. And so Republicans want them here for the cheap labor. Democrats want them here in order to get them registered to vote and put them into perpetual power. This is what's coming in the next Obama term. He has already effectively given them amnesty. He's ordered the ICE to stop deporting illegals. He has instituted what they call the DREAM Act by presidential decree after Congress rejected it twice. And in certain places like Chicago, they are already registering at least hundreds of thousands of these people to vote, which is illegal. But see, Obama has discovered something which other presidents might have suspected, but they never actually acted on. Obama has discovered that he can violate the law and violate the Constitution, and nothing will be done about it. His DREAM Act by decree was absolutely, totally illegal, totally unconstitutional. His assumption of the right to kill American citizens without trial was, again, totally unconstitutional, and nobody's raised so much as a whisper of protest other than a few days of muttering on the blogs. And so you've got a government in power right now that is willing and able to violate the law and violate the Constitution. I personally am of the belief that illegal aliens have, in fact, been voting in this country for many years, but just basically the law simply isn't being enforced. California is a case in point. So, in essence, the big aim of the Obama second term will be to formalize the legalization of these millions of illegals in this country, to give them the vote, and that's it. The Republicans will never again see the inside of the Oval Office, and we will be reduced to a minority population in our own land, and the Republicans will be reduced to a minority party, and will become, in essence, a one-party state, something similar to the PRI in Mexico that ruled Mexico for 60 or 70 years. That's what's coming. The Republicans have finally, at the 11th hour, awakened to this fact that they are desperately trying to stop it with these photo voter ID laws, which the Democrat judges and the Democrat courts are just striking down right, left, and center in a desperate attempt to get all their dead voters and their illegal voters to vote on November the 6th. And so it's kind of coming down to the wire here. I'm going to go out on a limb, and I may be wrong, and I hope I'm wrong. I personally think Obama is going to be reelected because, number one, the Democrats are going to practice massive vote fraud on November the 6th, like they did in 2008 with Acorn. And number two, I hate to say it, but I think Rush Limbaugh may be onto something. It's gotten to the point where normal white people are simply outnumbered in this country. And with the Electoral College, you only have to get about six or seven of the larger states, the minority has states with the big cities, and you've got the presidency. So I hate to be a Eeyore here, but I personally believe that Obama will be reelected. He's going to legalize those illegals. They're going to start voting, and normal white people from this point on can, in essence, kiss the old America goodbye because we're going to be simply outnumbered.
Well, that is a sad fact, and I have been a strong opponent of both legal and illegal immigration for a very long time. I did a 5-week series with Frosty Wooldridge on my show. He was on every Wednesday for 5 weeks leading up to this election, trying to get people to realize the importance that keeping our native, native Americans here, meaning American-born Americans. We may be of European ancestry, but we are the ones who made this country. And I also reach out to the black community because as the Hispanics gain political power, the blacks are going to suffer more and more and more. And there is no love between the black and Mexican communities or Hispanic communities. In fact, there's areas of Los Angeles that the Mexicans have come in illegally, and they have ethnically cleansed and removed the blacks from what had been traditionally black areas for multiple generations, and they have been displaced. And now these blacks have nowhere to go, and they compete with them for jobs. And once the blacks figure out that they are no longer the preferred minority and that their special statuses that they've been given and granted are being removed and reallocated to Hispanics, we're going to have some unhappy blacks in this country. And so the blacks better wake up and figure out that they've got something to lose in this as well, and they'd better get on the right bandwagon and start doing the right thing and voting their own interest.
When the balloon finally does go up, a lot of the chaos and a lot of the violence and a large part of the coming civil war will be black on brown violence. And I think the blacks are finally starting to wake up. They're realizing that the pie is finite, and there is not an endless supply of American goodies, and the more of those goodies that the Mexicans get, the less go to the blacks. So, yeah, that's another element in stirring the pot. I have to be honest, I'm not particularly concerned with what happens to either of those two races. I'm concerned about my own people, about white people, and this is why when the country breaks up, and that's what's going to happen, we're headed for a Soviet Union-style breakup of the United States when the central government simply collapses. I am concerned that the white man grab back as much of the pie as he can for himself, and so that our people will have some kind of future here, because right now this centralized tyranny from the United States government continues too much longer. We are headed for extinction, and I mean as in no more white people within a century.
Let me ask you a question. Who do you think is responsible for this? You know, I know you've got the Bush crime family. They're up to their eyeballs in it. Who else is responsible for this? You know, where is this impetus coming from? You know, we know in the Soviet Union, you had the Bolsheviks.
In a word, the Jews. Okay. You cannot understand what is happening in America or in the world today without an understanding of the Jewish question. To try and speak of the collapse of Western civilization or the problems that we're having right now or the financial collapse, anything like that, to try and speak of these things without speaking of Jews is like trying to discuss disease without discussing germs. True, it's not all their fault. We white people have allowed this to happen over the past 150 years or so. Basically, we've been stupid, we've been asleep, we've been naive, we have been entirely too easily deceived by these creatures. What it all boils down to, basically, is the Jewish question. The role that the Jews have played in European culture, in finance, in all throughout history, that is the Jewish question. The Jewish question is essentially, what is the world going to do with the Jews? They constitute a problem for everybody. In the long run, they are just as much a problem, say, for the blacks as for us, because the blacks don't benefit from the type of chaos that they've created. Those blacks like Louis Farrakhan, who have gone into their own history, understand that in many cases the people that brought them here as slaves were Jews, mostly the financial-type Jews who owned the slave ships. The white man may have sailed on the slave ships and taken all the risk, but it was the Jews who were financing and profiting from the slave trade. And just any aspect of civilization you look at, any aspect of the decay of civilization you look at, you will find always the Jew. Or like right now, the whole world is facing possible collapse because of the impending Israeli attack on Iran. I don't know if that's going to happen. The general opinion seems to be that Benjamin Netanyahu has been talked down from the ledge, and that right now they're saying, nah, he won't attack, you know, Iran, blah, blah, blah. We'll have to see. I still don't think the danger there has been alleviated yet, but this whole trouble with the fuel supply and the wars in the Middle East and the oil and all this sort of stuff, none of that would have happened if in 1948 we had not tried to impose this little gang of Jews on the eastern seaboard of the Mediterranean. Every problem that we have in the world can be traced back to the Jewish question in one form or another. Sometimes you have to look, but it's there.
So what do you propose going forward here? I mean, hypothetically, you're a novelist. I've not read Freedom Sons yet. I look forward to it coming out. But where does this take us in the future? You know, well, what if we follow the template of the book? And one of the things I looked at in the book is how you, the tactics that you use. And I've quoted you many times on this because your comment that wars are won by accountants, not by generals.
Actually, wars are lost by accountants, not generals. It's never the generals who surrender, it's the accountants. Okay, well, in the book, in the last novel, Freedom Sons, and by the way, I will send you volume one, that is out from Lulu. Like I said, the last novel, Freedom Sons, takes the first 50 years of the Northwest American Republic, and in this novel, in addition to writing, a fairly good fictional story, I try to anticipate some of the problems that any independent white nation will face after independence from the United States. And I think I hear your music coming there.
Yep, our music is coming up right here, and we'll be right back here in just a few minutes, so stick with us. Good morning and welcome back. This is Mike Harris on Republic Broadcasting Network Studio B. Today is Monday, October 8th, 2012, and we're on with a very special guest, Harold Covington, author of the Northwest novel series, which is going to be five novels here shortly, but I highly recommend that everyone out there listening buy these novels and really read them and really read the message that's there, because it is meaningful. And it does offer a possible scenario to preserve some of what America has been meant to be before it was hijacked and before we were subverted with this Zionist-occupied government here that we live under.
Great. I was speaking before the break about the last novel, Freedom Sons, which takes us through the first 50 years of the history of the Northwest American Republic, this fictitious white homeland I've created. And I kind of give snapshots. The first section is the first year after the revolution. The next section, which is the longest one, takes place 12 years after independence, and this is when the United States forcibly attempts to reconquer the white homeland. This basically was put into deal with all of these, nervous Nellies and naysayers who say, well, we can't have our own homeland, Harold, because the Americans will just nuke us. Then it goes on to 40 years, and the last section, which I haven't started on, will be either 48 or 50 years in the future. But the type of problems I deal with, other than reinvasion and attempted reconquest by the United States, are things like how to build a true white society that will survive and not be susceptible to the type of cultural poison that seeped into the United States. Things like building our own currency, building our own self-contained economy, and all the other things that we're going to have to do to create our own nation. In essence, what I'm advocating white people do, and maybe this is not the best example in the world, but we're going to have to do what the Jews did with Israel. We are going to have to choose part of this continent, and we are going to have to say, this land is ours. And by that, I mean all of ours. Once independence is established, there will be no non-whites, there will be no Jews, there will be no homosexuals, there will be none of this garbage that has invaded the rest of the continent, and this will be the land where we rest and restore our strength and raise our children in health and sanity. And once that land is chosen, we have to physically go there. This is the part of that we're in right now. I spend a large part of almost every podcast that I do every week on Radio Free Northwest pounding on the table and urging white people to pack the moving van, pack the U-Haul trailer, and get their asses up here where they're supposed to be. The Northwest migration has a lot of internet supporters, but they're not doing any good sitting in Texas or Cincinnati or Florida or Massachusetts or Wisconsin, wherever. They need to come here. That is the first step towards creating this new white nation, is to migrate. And so this basically, you might call it white Zionism. Again, that's probably a bad term, but we're trying to create our own nation here on the North American continent. And I believe that we're going to do so by hook or crook. If nothing else, when the balloon goes up, we'll grab it. and well, I hear the music
here's
again.
Here's our break music come up. We'll be right back at a short break. This is a short one here, so stick with us. Good morning and welcome back. This is Mike Harris on Republic Broadcasting Network, and we're on hour two of our show today. And it's Monday, October 8th, 2012. We're on with author Harold Covington, and I urge everyone to read his books and get some ideas as to what a possible future could be, because, like I said, this is all fiction. It's all written as such, and you know, just take it for what it's worth. But Harold, you know, you kind of mentioned the U.S. breaking up, and you know, this was first forecasted by Soviet demographers back in I think 1988, if I remember correctly. How do you see the country splitting up into what segments, what sections?
Okay,
how is it going to be?
Well, there is already a massive mestizo nationalist movement, whatever you want to call it, in the Southwest, especially in California, to create either a nation or a province of Mexico called Aztlan, which is the historic homeland of the Aztecs. And in fact, in my novels, that Aztlan is created. I refer to the Mexicans who live in California, Arizona, New Mexico, parts of Texas, and parts of Nevada, so forth and so on, as the Aztecs, to distinguish them from the normal Mexicans. But that is already well on track, and basically the Mexicans, frankly, are doing what white people need to do. And what they're doing in the Southwest, we need to do in the Northwest. The Mexicans have, in essence, already pretty much created their Aztlan by simply going there, voting with their feet, so to speak. But the rest of the country is going to be problematic. New England has kind of become a liberal, politically correct preserve. It's where all the wealthy liberals and Jews from New York and Washington, D.C. and Boston and places like that go for their, that's where they've all got their summer homes, you might say. That, and it's a small area. A lot of people say, well, New England is still white. And I say, yeah, the liberals keep it that way because they don't want to live around the minorities, you know, when they go to their summer homes or their weekend cottages or whatever in Vermont, etc. And the easterns, no doubt, the south, again, is going to be very problematic because large parts of the south are becoming Hispanified or Mexicanized, whatever you want to call it. I know in my home state of North Carolina, there is a huge Mexican population right now. I used to think the South would sort of become a black republic of New Africa or something. Now I'm not so sure. That is where you're going to get the big conflict between the blacks and the browns is in the South. What's left of the Southern whites will probably end up having to flee to the Northwest. The Midwest is a big, huge expanse of largely white emptiness, demographically speaking. All kinds of stuff could happen out there. If you want to take a look at the way the country's dividing up, Mike, go to the Huffington Post, the liberal website, and hunt around on there and see if you can find their projected map of how the Electoral College is going to go on November the 6th. They show that the entire West Coast, including, I'm sorry to say, Washington and Oregon, is blue. And then pretty much everything from there over to the East Coast itself and the industrial Midwest is red, with Florida kind of up in the air. But they show all of New England as blue, and the minority-heavy Midwest states like Ohio, Illinois, Wisconsin, and Pennsylvania as blue. If you look at that red state, blue state thing, you, in essence, have a good idea of the racial demographics of this country, because the blue states have all of the minority voters, especially in the big cities that swing those states blue for the Electoral College, and that big, huge red expanse in the middle from...
Well, what they refer to as flyover country.
Yeah, exactly, flyover country. That's the way it's going to go, and what's going to happen in flyover country is going to be very, very confused, but eventually the United States will break up. 50 years from now, there's not going to be a United States of America.
Okay, well, I hear our break music coming up again, and after this...
How can I stop these annoying collection calls?
Good morning, and welcome back. This is Mike Harris on Republic Broadcasting Network, Studio B. Today is Monday, October 8th, 2012, and we're on with guest author Harold Covington. And once again, I recommend that everyone read his books, because it really gives you some ideas as to what might possibly be lying ahead and how bad things could get if our government continues on the path that it's on. And, you know, one of the things, Harold, that your Northwest Army up there took on is they adopted a lot of the strategies and tactics of the Irish Republican Army. And they, you know, the Irish proved that this is a workable method in order to get an occupying force to leave the territory. And in your comment, that accountants are the ones who will end the war, who will lose it for you, because you have to make it expensive for them. And you've really articulated a very fictional but workable plan that's really compelling and really interesting. But right now, I want to give out the dial-in number, because I think some callers are wanting to talk to you a little bit.
Okay.
I've had a couple call in already, but I've been stalling them because I wanted to give you priority. But let me give out the dial-in number. It's 877-488-5350. And once again, it's 877-488-5350. And go ahead, I interrupted you. You were going to make a comment.
No, I was just going to say that the Irish won their War of Independence in the 1920s through the methods that I have described in my novels. A lot of people say, well, Harold, the IRA in the 1980s and 1990s didn't win. They were forced into the Good Friday Agreement, etc., etc. Well, yes and no. In a way, the IRA did win because they simply survived and they were able, in essence, to shoot their way to the table. Right now, you've got your IRA leaders like Jerry Adams and Martin McGinnis who are, you know, sitting in the legislatures right now. In essence, they were able to fight a major Western democracy to a standstill. It took them 30 years to do it, but although the IRA did not get their, you know, United Socialist Ireland that they were after, the fact is they're still around after 30 years of the British attempting to crush them. You might say that they're these leprechauns who went 12 rounds with Godzilla and they're still on their feet. So I consider the second IRA campaign, from 69 until about 98, to be a draw, put it that way. And the reason it was a draw was because, and this is something we're going to have to watch out for in this country, the reason it was a draw was because their leadership became corrupt and was bought off. Basically, Jerry Adams and McGinnis and the others sold out their lifelong cause for government salaries and government Mercedes and seats and Parliament and in the government, where they can sit around talking all day and drawing a paycheck. When the time comes to negotiate our independence from the United States, we are going to have to guard against any attempt on the part of the U.S. to buy off our leadership or to bribe our leaders to betray the cause or to fob us off with some kind of white Puerto Rico. I mentioned that in my novel, A Mighty Fortress, which is about the Longview negotiations, so forth and so on. So that has always been a failing of the white man. A large reason that we have failed in a lot of what we attempt is corrupt leadership, bribable leadership, leadership that is confused. The classic example is Ian Smith in Rhodesia. But anyway, I'll go ahead and take your callers.
Okay, well, let's go ahead and welcome Dan from Missouri. And once again, the number here is 877-488-5350. That's 877-488-5350. So if you want to call in, have a question or comment for Harold, please feel free. And let's welcome Dan from Missouri. Dan, good morning. Welcome to the show, sir.
Good morning, gentlemen. First of all, I'd like to thank you, Mike, for having Mr. Covington on this morning. I didn't realize he was out there. There's a lot I don't know, but I'm working at it. I'm definitely going to go for his books and enjoy, in a twisted sort of way, reading them, it sounds like. Also, I wanted to say I was really, really surprised last night. I've got one of those satellite dishes that's got free radio, free television and radio from around the world, and there was Mike Harris on Press TV.
Yes, indeed, I was. I gave an interview yesterday for Press TV, and if you recall, the topic was, what is the influence of money in this current election cycle? And I advocated everyone to avoid the two major parties. And I'm going to come out officially today, and I'm going to endorse Merlin Miller. from American Third Position is I think he is probably the best candidate who really sticks to the American values. I was looking at Gary Johnson very carefully, but Gary is too soft on the Illegal Immigration Act and wants to offer a path to citizenship, which I outright reject for these border-jumping illegals who have invaded my country. So anyway, but do you have any questions or comments for Harold?
Well, actually, it's no, I don't for Harold, but I'm just engrossed in listening to you guys. There's one other little slot I wanted you to fill in for me. You mentioned a House bill that authorized FEMA to dispose of bodies. Would you mention that bill number again, and then I'll get off the air and listen to you guys.
Okay, from memory, I believe it was 16695. I'm not sure, but if you go to veteranstoday.com and look up Jim Fetzer's article of yesterday, he can give you the House bill number. Gordon Duff also has an article up today about the coming civil war and the need for FEMA to have authorization to dispose of massive casualties. And the only possible reason that FEMA would need this authorization is if they're planning on going to war with the American people.
Right. Well, gentlemen, I can't thank you enough for what you do. It's a light.
If I could interject here real quick, Dan, you say this is the first you're hearing about my books. For you and the other listeners out there who want to find out more about the Northwest Imperative, because it's not just my novels, you might check out our website at www.northwestfront.org. That's one word, Northwest Front. Northwestfront.org, and you'll be able to find all kinds of information there, including a copy of the draft constitution for the Northwest American Republic, that kind of thing.
Great. Thank you, gentlemen, again. It's a light at the end of the tunnel.
Well, thank you, Dan. Thanks for the call. Thanks for being a listener. We really like it. Let me give out the dial-in number again. It's 877-488-5350. And we had another caller, Frank, who dropped off here a minute ago. And I hope Frank go ahead and calls us back. So, Frank, if you're listening, please feel free, because we welcome the call. You're always a good caller and a good contributor to the show. But Harold, really, you know, when it comes right down to it, what other choices do the American people have at this point in time to protect themselves, their families, their posterity? Because this country is being ripped away from the people who made it and founded it and created it to be what it is. And it's only been since the end of World War II that this downward spiral that we're on, that is continuing, has happened.
Torn to pieces, as I said at the conclusion of one of my segments earlier, 50 years from now, there's not going to be a United States of America in any form that we can recognize. Now, as to what can be done, other than some form of separatism, there is no feasible plan. You can't put Humpty Dumpty back together again. There is an old saying that any fool can turn an aquarium into fish soup, but nobody can turn the fish soup back into an aquarium, and that's what most right-wingers for the past 60, 70 years have been trying to do. They've been trying to turn the fish soup back into an aquarium, and it can't be done because the damage has already been done. There are too many non-whites in this country. There is too much corruption. There is too much moral corruption. The financial structure is a mess, so forth and so on. Most American right-wing leaders, groups, movements, etc., promise or maintain that somehow or other they can wave a magic wand and make all of the past 70 years or so just go away, and that we can kind of return to this idealized vision of our past from the 1950s, and I can remember a little bit of the 1950s, and I can tell you they were cracked up to be, but you can't turn back the clock to some idealized America where everybody lives in suburbs with white picket fences and everybody goes to a nice little Baptist or Presbyterian church on Sunday, and they have backyard barbecues, and the girls all wear bobby socks, and Ozzie Nelson walks around the house wearing his cardigan and all that stuff. I mean, it can't be done. We are facing a future which is going to revert to what Arnold Toynbee referred to most of mankind's past as being nasty, brutish, and short. That's what's coming, and
no,
we
really,
have to prepare for that.
The history of mankind has really been one of abject poverty, where you had very few people with a great deal of wealth, and everyone else lives in abject poverty. The other thing I want to point out, though, is that demographics is destiny. And as we see the browning and darkening of America, you look at books like The Bell Curve that document the IQ issues, the differences in IQs between different racial demographics. And if we're going to be a darker country, we're going to be a dumber country.
Absolutely.
And how are we going to compete with China and Japan and the other countries that are racially homogenous? And how are we going to compete with them if we don't have the intellectual horsepower resident within our population?
We're not going to compete with them. They're going to overrun us.
Okay, well, I hear our music sneaking in the background, and we'll be right back after this short break. And we've got callers lined up, so we'll be right back shortly. Good morning and welcome back. This is Mike Harris on Republic Broadcasting Network Studio B, and it's Monday, October 8th, 2012. We're on with guest author Harold Covington. And once again, let me give the dial-in number at 877-488-5350. Once again, it's 877-488-5350. And let's go ahead and welcome Nick from Tennessee. Nick, good morning and welcome to the show, sir.
Oh, thank you, Mike. Harold, I have a question for you. Well, first of all, your books are going to be my next read. And I have a question. I don't know if you can answer it or not without getting in trouble with someone.
I was worried about getting in trouble. I wouldn't have written the books.
Okay. Okay, then I got a question for you. And that's regarding location, whether it be for the final settlement you're talking about or for an interim move. How would you rate Ozarks in Missouri? There's a lot of people that seem to gravitate there.
A lot of white people are, in essence, retreating to the mountains. It's kind of like what the Welsh did when the Saxons came. But I've never been up in the Ozarks. I understand it's a very pretty country. And I know a lot of people are moving up toward in the Appalachians. A lot of people are moving into the Rockies, trying to get up into the mountainous areas where non-whites tend to be not so comfortable, and therefore they don't go as much. And that's understandable. I get that. The problem is what we have to do is to create a nation of our own on this continent. We can't create what amount to enclaves. And by enclaves, I mean small or maybe even large landlocked areas that are not economically viable and not sustainable as a permanent homeland. A homeland for white people has to have certain attributes, assets. First and foremost, it needs a coastline. The enclave or homeland cannot be landlocked because that would mean that an enemy could control access. This was a large part of the problem we had in Rhodesia, where our lifeline was through South Africa. And when we kind of lost that lifeline, we had a lot of problems. But a homeland for white people also needs a large amount of space, a Lebensraum, as Hitler called it. Space to basically put an entire race into where we can raise families in safety and sanity. So we're going to need a lot of space. We're going to need natural resources that we can use to manufacture what we need to grow our own food. We're going to need arable land, agricultural production. We're going to need industrial infrastructure that we can take over and use to make what we have to survive, so forth and so on. But beyond that, you have to bear in mind, the white man doesn't need just to survive. We need eventually to triumph. We're not looking to just continue to exist. A lot of people seem to think that the Northwest Migration is simply running off into the North Woods somewhere and hiding out in a little cabin in Idaho or Oregon in order to hide from Obama. No, that's not what Northwest Migration is about. Northwest Migration is about creating a homeland for all of our people the world over. It is about creating our own nation state, our own government, our own judiciary, our own military that is all white. So we need to stop trying to escape and evade so much as we need to learn to confront. And all of this, by the way, has gone into at some length in the novels, because I know this idea that migration is simply, in essence, running off into the tall grass and hiding from the United States government. That is a very common perception among white people, that all you've got to do is just run off and hide someplace and survive, and then somehow or other it'll all go away. No, unless the evil which has destroyed this country is confronted and defeated, it's not just going to go away. And surviving won't be enough. I know I'm kind of rambling here, but is that kind of answering your question?
Oh, it does. It's a very well thought out answer, obviously. I do have a little minor facet to this question, and that's for an interim location. My wife doesn't like Missouri Ozark because it's so close to New Madrid, and that could let loose any time. There's several high crime rate cities within that vicinity. St. Louis is a very high crime rate, and
right now
Memphis.
We have a We have a good transportation system in this country. It still works. We still have the interstate highways. Gas is expensive as hell, but you can still afford it. My comment on that would be, why bother with an interim destination? You need to get up here to the homeland itself, which right now consists, as far as the ones the NF is working with, the Northwest Front, which is my group, Washington, Oregon, Idaho, and the western part of Montana, west of Interstate 15. Now, that's a big territory. You can find just about anything you're looking for in that span of country. If you like, you know, the ocean and the beach, you can come down to the Oregon and Washington coast. If you like high deserts, you can go to Boise. If you like forests and all the deep woods, you can go pretty much all over the Northwest in various places. And so why bother to stop short?
Okay, good point. Another question would be, is there
Hang on a second.
I'm sorry, I can't hear you.
Our break music is coming up, so I'm going to ask you to hold over the break, okay? So hang on with us.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
Good morning and welcome back. This is Mike Harris on Republic Broadcasting Network, Studio B. Today is Monday, October 8th, 2012, and we're on with author Harold Covington. And, Nick, I'll give you another minute here to finish up your questions. Then we have to move on to other callers, but I want to give you adequate time to get all your questions answered from Harold.
Okay, appreciate it. My next and last question would be, considering this would be a hotbed of Patriot activity and probably a location for a Patriot renaissance, Would the powers that be think this might be a good place to beta test the latest plague?
There is danger in assembling all our people in a given area. I understand this. I accept it. But on the other hand, if we remain scattered and in hiding and helpless, then we're not going to survive as a race. We cannot not do what we need to do to survive out of fear of the enemy. Now, as far as testing plagues, I mean, we're dealing here with a regime that has no conscience and no sense of responsibility at all, that has lost touch with the Constitution, lost touch with basic human decency. Yes, they're capable of anything. And all I can say is whatever they throw at us, we're going to have to take it. We're going to have to survive. We're going to have to confront the United States, and we are going to have to prevail. We have to, because if we don't, we will cease to exist as a race. Beyond that, I don't have a crystal ball. I cannot predict with exactitude what's going to happen. This book I'm working on right now is an attempt to extrapolate what might happen, but all I can say is we're going to have to confront them, and we're going to have to beat them. This has to be done.
Okay, that's much food for thought. Well, I thank you very much, Harold and Mike, for your time.
Hey, well, thank you. Thanks for the call, Nick. Let's go ahead and welcome Michael from New York. Michael, welcome to the show, and good morning, sir.
Hey, good morning, gentlemen. Appreciate your show always and the conversation with your guest, Harold. I want to just present a different scenario, gentlemen. The United States is even much bigger than the people occupying it right now, whether they're Caucasians, blacks, Mexicans, whatever. This is a country founded by God for His New World Order, and it's going through a major test. And not only the blacks, which are failing the test, and these Mexicans and stuff, but the Americans themselves, who lost sight of their own history, their own culture, allowed everything to get to where it is today.
Absolutely.
But I just want to say, are you familiar with George Washington's vision at Valley Forge?
I read that long ago, and I am sorry to say it. I'm getting senile in my old age. I cannot remember the exact terms of it, but yeah, I'm familiar. I know what you're talking about. It's just I can't off the top of my head remember what it says.
That's fine, sir. But well, at the end of that vision, he's seen the Revolutionary War and the prevailing colonies becoming the United States, then the expansion, then the Civil War, and the Union being saved, and then the end of the century, which is our time frame, where we get invaded. And so they're going to throw the UN Army at us to quell the revolt. So then, with the United Nations Army invading us, as George seen it, we're going to be overwhelmed because we're not prepared, as he stated. And then at the very end, there was this divine intercession. Then the country saved at the very end and becomes a phenomenal country, just like it's destined to be.
I hope you're right. I frankly am not of the opinion that we need to be sitting around waiting for divine intercession, though no disrespect to the Almighty, but there is an old saying that the Lord helps him who helps himself.
Absolutely.
I tell my guests all the time is it's up to we the people, because there ain't no Superman going to come and fix it for us. We have to do
it. Guys, believe me, I agree, and I don't believe in sitting around and waiting for somebody else to carry your load, and so I'm 100% on that with you all the way, guys. However, we're overwhelmed. Right now the dam's about to burst and there's nothing holding it back. We're in a situation now where they got us right where they want us, and they know that. We are outnumbered, we're outflanked, we are not prepared. But nonetheless, we're going to be overwhelmed. The whole world is going to gang up on us, and that's why they built up Red China. And it's going to be, unfortunately, a very dark day, but there's going to be the light at the end of the tunnel, because we're not going to be allowed to be extinguished, but there will be at the very end this divine help to bring, restore us, to revive us at the very end. And that's the good news. Okay, guys, well, I appreciate it. I just wanted to give you guys a little encouragement that the way I see it, guys, this is how it's going to end up for us, and the United States is going to prevail, intact, coast to coast.
Well, I hope you're right.
A lot of people do like to go back to the country's origins, 1776, so forth and so on. The United States Constitution was unquestionably a noble document and all that sort of stuff, but what people have to bear in mind is that at the time the Founding Fathers created the Constitution, we were 13 small colonies on the eastern seaboard. The population was like about 98% white Anglo-Saxon Protestant, and I think some of the Founding Fathers probably would have had a little bit of difficulty envisioning what was going to come in the next 200 or 250 years. For example, slaves were referred to in the Constitution as three-fifths of a man for census purposes, and I don't think it was ever specified in these founding documents that this country was for white people only, because the Founding Fathers just figured that none of their descendants would ever be stupid enough to think otherwise. It was just kind of a given. And so I have a great respect for George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, Benjamin Franklin, all these people who actually founded our country. But again, and this is something a lot of right-wingers, I think, have a problem accepting, the fact is it's no longer 1776. It's 2012. We are in an entire new world here, and we have to base decisions which involve our racial future
on what our current reality is.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Yeah. We have to really assess what the current reality is. And we've got another caller holding. Let's welcome Greg from California. Greg, good morning and welcome to the show, sir.
Yeah, good morning, Mike and Harold. Good morning, sir. I have a great interest in your subject matter. I've got a prominent history concerning these issues myself with the contacts I've made over the last 30 years. Harold, are you aware of Don Harkin, who used to be with the Idaho Observer?
I'm familiar with the Idaho Observer, and the name Harkins rings a vague bell. But yeah, I'm familiar with the Idaho Observer. It's no longer published anymore, is it?
Not really. Ingrid is having a hell of a time. I believe she turned it over.
He died, didn't he, and his wife took over?
The government killed him, supposedly, yes, sir. His wife is passing it on to somebody else, I believe. He used to attend a white culture meetings in Europe. To what avail that was all about, myself, I don't know. Are you in contact at all with David Duke?
No.
Okay. All right. This is a very complex issue, which I'm, is it possible, Harold, that I may talk to you in the future, by landline, sometime, because I need to talk to you, because I've been in contact with, you can't imagine. Have you heard of Greg Evenson? Let me ask you that.
Heard of who?
Greg Evenson.
No, I haven't. I tell you what, for those who want to get into, I'm sorry to put in a plug here, for those who want to get in touch with me, as I say, first off, you can go to our website at www.northwestfront.org, all one word, northwestfront.org. My personal email address is nwnet, N-W-N-E-T, at earthlink.net, N-W-N-E-T, at earthlink.net. And if you want to email me, you can do so.
Yeah, I don't have a computer, but I do have email.
Yeah, I need to talk because this is a complex issue. Because how do you get around? Not that you're going to be concerned about this, but you know the history of world and the conquest that they've prevailed as far as you described, and who the bad guys really are, as you demonstrated how they've taken over, is a unique situation, diabolical and perverse as it is. But how do you get around the racial issue of being accused? Because I suppose you're not going to be concerned about it. Kind of the first question, right?
I'm sorry, I don't follow. What racial issue?
Well, the fact that your morality, in other words, are you a Christian man? Tell me that.
No, I'm not.
Okay, that I understand that.
But I also want to make it clear here, the Northwest Imperative, the Northwest Migration, is not a movement of faith. There is no religious qualification.
Right.
And we are not a movement of faith. We are a movement of blood.
You're familiar with the Free State Project up in the Northeast? You're familiar with them?
New Hampshire, yeah, the Libertarian Migration, yeah. Interestingly enough, they're not having any too much more success than we're having.
Right.
That's when the libertarians want to get all the libertarians to move to New Hampshire. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I just wondered, you know, because I listen to them, but I think they accept all races to try
They're not racial at all. Yeah.
Right. But to prevail with a white culture within the capacity that we would want to do is going to be very difficult because, as what I would propose to you, Harold, is like this one researcher friend of mine, which would give you a run for your money on concept and the viability of the success of a white culture, would be, where are our F-16s and where is our Spetsnaz troops? Because, see, they can completely, with the technology they have, completely kill a town, much less they
right.
have the ability
I get this objection a lot that basically we don't dare ever resist because the enemy's just too strong and they'll crush us and so forth and so on. But the thing is that, again, I hate to keep sending people back to the books, but if you read the novels, you will see how I believe a situation like that could be dealt with. To make a long story short, I simply do not believe that the United States government and the whole United States infrastructure as it's now constituted could take what I saw happening in Ireland when I was there in the 1980s. Basically, the Irish are a lot tougher about this than Americans were, and I don't believe that the United States of America could withstand a sustained 30-year insurrection of the type that occurred in Northern Ireland, put it that way.
Well, the British did choose to annihilate them with what power they had. Though why they did it slower politically is a very interesting question.
I'm sorry, did we get cut off there?
No, he's still there. Are you still on there, Greg?
Yeah, Harold, you didn't understand my statement.
Okay, well, we're coming up on a break, so we'll be right back. Hold your thought there, okay? Well, good morning and welcome back. This is Mike Harris on the Public Broadcasting Network, Studio B. It's Monday, October 8th, 2012. We're on with author Harold Covington. And, Greg, I give you 30 seconds to wrap it up because I got to have one more caller I'm going to get in today, okay?
Oh, yeah. All I can say, Harold, is I would not disagree with any implementation that you'd want to, you know, uphold within a society created by your desires.
Okay. All right, Greg. Well, I have to stop you there, but thank you very much
for
your call.
Thanks a lot.
Hey, thank you so much. I really appreciate your support. And Harold, do you want to respond briefly to that before we take our next caller?
Well, again, yes, I am not denying that what we are attempting to do is going to be hard. The vision, if you want to call it, that I lay out in my books is only one way it could happen. I genuinely believe that when the country breaks up, there will be some kind of white nation in the Northwest. Most likely, it probably will happen in some way completely different from what I wrote about, but we can't ever give up.
Well, that's a good point, and no plan ever survives contact in battle. Mm-hmm. And let's go ahead and welcome Jim. Jim, welcome to the show, and sorry to keep you holding so long.
Look, I just one or two quick comments. I just think, with all due respect, Harold, I think you're a very, very dangerous man. And
one does one's best.
Yeah, I know. What you're proposing to me is you're gonna tuck your tail and run and hide from our problems. And I'm reading a quote from you here from some years ago where you say America must end. And one of your podcast listeners said, your best podcast ever, Harold. the Jew Republic is dead. Long live the coming Aryan Republic. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what you're doing to me, is you're spewing more of a Hitler light, L-I-T-E, type thing. My view is, and with all due respect, is that we get our nation back by honoring our Constitution.
Okay.
And if all you want to have is white people in your group, then so you're going to allow the Bushes up there and the Cheneys and the Rumsfeld and those crowds?
White people.
Look,
okay,
that's what you're saying, sir, is all white people.
Okay, yeah, white exactly. People. Oh, yes, definitely. Because white people were the people who created the country in the first place. But you're saying
Jim,
give the guest a chance,
to
respond.
Now, you say we need to get our country back by honoring the Constitution. Okay, fine. If that were possible, I think we would have accomplished it in the past 50 or 60 years, because that's what most sincere right-wingers have been trying to do. They've been trying to use the system, use the ballot box, and use the Constitution. And I can't recall how many pieces of literature and books and whatnot I have read down through the decades saying we must restore our Constitution, but the trouble is that we are ruled by people who have no intention of allowing us to do any such a thing. You know, someone once wrote that the purpose of democracy is to prevent change, and that's what we've got in this country.
So
if there was some way to bring it all back, I'd be all for it.
We're out of time. Our hero break is coming up. I have to cut everybody off. We're out of time. There's no shortage of controversy.